Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Coffee with a Techie Doctor podcast. This is a series of informal appointments where we'll be talking about technology in the life science industry. I will be your host today. My name is Pedro Lledó, and I'm a physician, a doctor, and an expert in clinical technology. At each of the coffee appointments, I invite a special guest. They are key opinion leaders in the life science industry. And usually we ask them to share their insights into the world of technology. Today, we have Jonathan Burr. Please, Jonathan, introduce yourself.
Hi, Pedro. So I'm a senior vice president at Sama. We are a technology company that uses AI to change the way that we run clinical trials. I've personally been in this industry for over 20 years, working in big consulting organizations as well as technology companies, exclusively focused on the data flow and the analytics and insights inside clinical trials.
Okay, thank you, Jon. Today, we will be talking about decentralized clinical trials. What is the core difference between the decentralized clinical trials and the old-fashioned trials?
That's a really good question because I think we've been doing elements of what we're now calling decentralized trials for a while now. And certainly a lot of those are prevalent in the healthcare space, not necessarily the clinical trial space, but the healthcare space has been sort of doing these for a while. But before I get onto that, you know, I've got a sort of fundamental disagreement with calling them decentralized clinical trials. I like to look at them as patient-centric, right? So the things that we are doing in these decentralized trials are making them less site-focused, less focused on the doctor, right? Which is a doctor. I'm not sure if you'll be happy at, but it's making it more patient-focused, right? So the things that are really coming to the fore now are things like using technology for e-consent, direct investigational products shipping to the patient, using novel devices to collect the data. You know, we've been using diaries for some time now, but using things like ePro or completely new data capture solutions, sometimes coupled with wearables, connected devices, things that the patient can use themselves, and they don't need a doctor or a nurse to actually do that. But then when they do need something that is related to like a nurse or a doctor, like a blood draw, then we now have this concept of remote patient visits where companies are sort of using pools of contract nurses to actually go out and do home visits locally, right? So that the patient doesn't have to travel to the site. So that's essentially what I sort of look at as decentralized clinical trials. Yeah.
Yes, thank you, John. Because we are get used to the doctor-centric trials. So the, mm-hmm. the site investigator is controlling almost everything, their team. So patients are mostly part of the pool of the information they provide to us. So how did this decentralized clinical trials evolve, story evolve until now?
Yeah, so I think that we've been sort of, as the industry, trying different techniques to increase the pool of patients. There was a statistic that I learned probably over 10 years ago now that 50% of all investigators who run a clinical trial don't run a second clinical trial. So what that ultimately means is that the pool of investigators remains static. So the people who are running trial after trial after trial are the same investigators, and therefore it's the same pool of patients that sort of belong to that investigator, or patients have to seek out the investigator that's running the trial that they wish to participate in. That has led to problems as we've evolved in trials to get the right patients enrolled at the right time because the pool is small. So I think that, you know, we've been trying for many years now to break the paradigm of recruitment, to look for patients that don't necessarily belong to that particular clinic. But I think it's been accelerated over the past, 18 to 24 months because of COVID, right? Uh-huh. We've seen the world shift completely to the point where, clinics and healthcare providers were closing their doors, rightly to sort of stem the pandemic. But that meant that clinical trials couldn't stop where they were giving life-saving treatments. So we had to come up with new and novel ideas of still serving the clinical trials that were in flight, right? So that has really exploded over the past 12 to 18 months, this sort of term of decentralized clinical trials and the vendors, both technology and services, that are popping up to service the DCT market.
Okay, great. This is great. So this evolved very quickly, as you say. So which technology tools or system should we run to have this now? Can we use the old ones or should we trash them all?
Yeah, so I think my personal opinion, and I should have probably mentioned this at the start, these opinions are mine, not necessarily of Sama's, right? So these are my personal opinions, is that we should start with a clean slate, right? We're trying to invent a sort of new process that is patient-centric. And I've been on, various talks and boards and industry forums where we are sort of looking at decentralized clinical trials. And this is sort of what I mean around, it isn't decentralized, it's patient-focused, right? Because the pharma companies or the tech companies immediately come to the table with like, okay, so where does EDC fit in? Where does a CTMS fit in? Where does this system, that system? And in my personal opinion, we should be throwing all of those out and thinking, well, we've got the opportunity to redefine the way that we've been working. Over the past 20 or 30 years, we've seen the old process of paper CRFs and the way that we do data management and statistics has been digitized, but it hasn't fundamentally changed, right? So we've had 20 years of using EDC that essentially just takes a paper CRF and puts mm-hmm. it on a screen. We haven't changed the way that we operate. This is a really good example of a catalyst to change the way we operate. So I think we mentioned previously, like novel data capture solutions, where the patient is basically controlling the data flow. And I think in the future, we're going to see a lot more integrations with things like the Apple Watch or Android, where the patient can basically load up their medical record and say, grant access, grant access, grant access to various different pieces. So, we talk about direct from EHR, but that's still back to the clinic. I think we're going to get to a world where the patient controls the data capture. And today that's still form-based, right? The patient's entering the information in a sort of controlled way where the investigator gets to see some information, but the patient controls the majority of it. But I think that's going to radically change. And because of that, all of our back-end systems need to change, right? Our sort of clinical data management, our conformance to SDTM, our stats flow, that's all going to change, right? We've seen Pfizer's big COVID trial, about 50% of all of the data came from ePRO. And a lot of that data was actually patient narratives, right? So wasn't sort of like your traditional form fill data that we used to on CRF. So that requires a whole new approach to data cleaning and to statistics. So I think the whole flow needs to change. And we haven't even started talking about CTMS and KPIs and metrics, right? We've been sort of looking at over the past 10 or so years, right? That's all going to have to change. So yeah, that's what I think. Rebuild it.
This looks like a very revolutionary idea. If we need to get rid of everything and the people have been trained for many years in the old systems, yeah, that they know very well, and also the site investigators or the site nurses. So how can we choose the right technology for this approach? Can we adopt the current system, or how can we adapt?
Yeah, so I think the current systems, I mean, just being a little less fanciful and coming back down to today, the current systems are very site focused, right? I mean, if you think about a traditional EDC flow, you're picking the study, the site, the patient, the visit, the CRF. So that concept of a site is what's really stopping the current solutions from being used. Yes, there's ePro systems that exist today. There's cool new startups like Medible that exist in the marketplace that are addressing decentralized trials. So I think that, you know, the traditional software vendors are trying to not necessarily adapt their core technologies, but building around it, right? So building ancillary products that support it. But then if you think about the remote nurses that need to go and do blood draws and things like that, that we talked about, that's going to require a whole new, you know, module of a CTMS, for example, because a CTMS is focused around monitoring reports and the sort of trip reports from the monitors, your SDV schedule, payments and milestones that are coming out of your time and event schedule. So that all needs to change to then be able to interface with the nurse's systems and give the nurse access to, you know, scheduling information and lab information and the ability to sort of go to the patient, sort of like a logistics flow, and then you've got the investigational product, right? And sending out the investigational product not to a pharmacist or not to the doctor, but to the patient. And I think we've seen technology being used quite novelly in the healthcare space, where like FedEx has a sort of validated audit trail for delivery of medicines. I know that Uber's been trialed in this space because they've inherently got this validated audit trail of where their cars go to. So I think that it's going to be like an amalgamation of new technologies plus modern technologies in the short term, and then ultimately, you know, 5-10 years down the line, I'd love to see it radically change, like I said previously.
Yeah, but all this looks like very expensive. It's a very critical decision to take. So vendor selection and choosing the right technology is a very critical point here. Can we have this on premises, or all those technologies are mostly hosted in the cloud?
Yeah, I think that all new technologies are largely cloud hosted now. With the exception of apps that are installed on the local devices, which is something else. I think we need to embrace this concept of like bring your own device, right? Like we can't be shipping laptops or brand new phones or tablets out to all participants like we used to with the investigators. You know, the investigators would have 3 or 4 laptops for all of the trials that they were running for the pharma company, so that the pharma company could, you know, secure it, control it, put a VPN on it, or whatever they needed to do. We can't really do that with patients. So we need to embrace this bring your own device concept. You know, we're seeing authentication with the 2 or 3 factor authentication for most personal apps as well as business apps these days. We know that we can use, you know, the iPhone, Android phones in encrypted fashions. So I think that consumer technology is there, and cloud is just making it easier to deploy, right? I mean, you're going to have devices, wearables, that will have their own device cloud where the data ultimately goes back to. And it's just much easier to do cloud to cloud connections to then get the data into the repositories or the sort of processing space that a pharma company needs to then amalgamate all of the data together. So that's and I mean scalability as well, right? So like scalability on both the number of patients, but also on geographic regions, right? You're no longer just targeting this one hospital. You're now spreading out to the world where you've got patients. And we had to use, you know, some pretty sophisticated data center technology in order to support things like a data center sitting in the US, but being accessed in Europe or Japan, where we were running trials. Now we've got patients all over the place that are accessing these systems. So cloud is definitely the way, yeah, the way forward here.
So, I mean, are we going to use any type of AI or data analysis automation when we are using these services in the cloud?
Yeah, I would absolutely hope so. I mean, certainly that's what we do. We actually helped Pfizer on their big COVID trial, right? So all of the changes to the data collection and ePro and all of this kind of stuff on the Pfizer COVID trial, we actually, so Sama, put in our smart data query utility, which uses AI to do anomaly detection and data reconciliation across data sources. So we were able to save Pfizer a whole month on their data cleaning process, which enabled them to get to market faster. I think they went from last patient, last visit, all the way to their emergency submission in about 4 days. Mm-hmm. And that was largely down to this expedited AI-driven data cleaning process. But I think you're going to see AI coming in, not just at the end of the process, but at the start where we're actually identifying patients, you know, so using novel data sources, maybe like census data or claims data to go out and look for patient populations, because we're now targeting patients that don't necessarily belong to one investigator or one site. So I think across the data chain, we're going to see AI, machine learning revolutionize the way that we run trials.
I see. So going back to patients, is this an easy to adopt technology for patients? Are they going to wear a lot of wearables or new applications, apps installed in their smartphone, something like that? This will affect their daily life?
So I think there's a couple of things. Probably you've got to look at the sort of technology in the population, right? And I sort of like to look at the apps that people use on a daily basis, right? Your Gmail app, Facebook, Instagram, Amazon, right? These applications are on another scale from the applications that we're used to working with in a business sense, right? You've got these old school ERP systems, old school email systems, right? I mean, as much as Microsoft likes to redesign Outlook, it's nowhere near as good as Gmail, right? And the vast majority of the population uses Gmail. My 86-year-old grandma sends me email through Gmail on her tablet, right? So you've got a sort of relatively tech-enabled population now. And I know that's not blanket across all of the world, but you've got like general tech enabled population. And certainly when you take a step back, the previous generation from my grandma, my parents, they are using technology every single day in the life, whether it's to order something, to go on Facebook, email, text messages, that kind of thing. So I think that the technology in a decentralized trial is just catching up, right? It's just catching up with where consumer technology is today. And certainly as the aging population dwindles and the younger generations come through, technology is just a part of their life. And I know that behind the scenes, you and I spoke about my children and how my five-year-olds entered school. They're not even teaching technology now to five-year-olds because they view it as such an integral part of their life. They don't need to teach technology, right? They're sort of focusing on all the other academic subjects, but technology isn't new and novel now. It is just part of their life. So I think, yes, it'll be a little bit more burdensome, to use that phrase, for the patient, because a lot of it puts the onus on the patient. But there's a lot of benefit back to the patient, not just controlling their data, but getting access to study records early, being able to sort of take control of their destiny throughout the clinical trial process and not having to rely on visits to their doctor constantly.
One of our last question for you. Compare with the current old-fashioned systems, is this much quicker to put a clinical trial running with the new technologies, or with do you need more resources or time to start a clinical trial with these decentralized trials now?
That's a really good question, and it's sort of not one that I think we've got the answers for today.
Maybe it will depend on the technology you choose,
or
the partners, right?
And I'm like, sure, you're going to need different resources, right? You're going to need more help desk to help people out, because it's more consumers, right? If you think about the users, the sort of users or consumers of technology is then all of the 300 patients or 3,000 patients in a phase 3 trial. It isn't the 20 investigators, right? So the help desk and the technology deployment will be different. But I'd like to think that with, you know, all of the things that we've been striving for in terms of an electronic protocol definition, you know, the ability to get to SDTM faster, the ability to do analytics faster, they're all just going to be embedded into this new technology. So we're not going to have to invent old processes to try and convert old software to the new, but we're going to be starting from a scratch. So in theory, it should be faster to start up a clinical trial. It should be easier to get the data in. It should be easier to get queries answered, because you're going direct to source. You're not using the middleman. Mm-hmm. And it should be easier to get the data out and processed, right? So I think, yes, it'll be faster to start a clinical trial, faster to execute the trial. But there could be challenges around help desk and support and usability and some of that kind of stuff, like, you know, teething problems that you would expect when you adopt new technology with new users. But hopefully the benefits outweigh the risk here.
Okay. Thanks, Jonathan. What's the main advice you may give to the sponsors that are willing to start a decentralized clinical trial now?
I would say be open-minded, right? So approach things not in the way that you've always done it, right? I think we've seen that so much over the past, you know, 10, 20, 50 years, just like protocols evolve because they've been copied from previous protocols. So we're collecting data that we've always collected, but it isn't necessarily linked to endpoints. You know, all that stuff just needs to change, right? We need to start afresh with a open mind, develop protocols that are patient-centric, right? And in sort of doing so, you're going to get leaner protocols, leaner data sets, and that's going to lead to faster, more efficient trials. Be open-minded with your technology, right? Look at new and novel EDC or data collection sources, right, that aren't your traditional vendors. Look at different ways of sort of integrating with the patient. You know, I'm sort of seeing some of these data collection solutions partnering with digital agencies to create a whole like experience for the patients, right? That isn't just around the data capture, but gives them, you know, videos and suggestions and hints and tips, and I like creates a whole patient experience around their participation in the trial. Like, those are the kind of things that are going to make a real difference to the patient and make it easier for them to participate in your trial, right? So just be open-minded, embrace technology, and try to think of the patient.
Okay. I also add something to advise the sponsor is talk to the right partner, and also talk to to all teams in your company, biostats, data management, IT, startup unit, regulatory, and also, of course, management, because they will take the final decision. They will put the money. They talk also the to choose the right vendor selection and the right technology. Thank you very much, Jonathan, for your participation today. And for everyone, I invite you to check our previous releases of the Coffee with a Techie Doctor podcast, visiting our website, www.arithmostech.com. Arithmostech.com. Okay. Thank you for coming today and enjoy your day. Goodbye.